Welcome everyone to a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Weintraub. How's it doing, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Great. This week, not as big of a week in terms of EV news and Tesla news as we are used to. Well, we've been lucky in the past few weeks before that. It was a great month for EV news, especially in the Tesla world. But we still have a few fun things to discuss. And we're going to start with something we've been doing in the last few weeks, which is talking about some kind of delivery update because, of course, Tesla is trying to get a new delivery record to prove Wall Street wrong and to try to boost a little bit of investor confidence, I think, in the stock because there's been a big drop over the last few months, aside from the rebound in the last few weeks. And in the last few weeks, we showed a lot of confidence in Tesla achieving that goal through a new record deliveries in North America. They've been trying to deliver 33 to 36,000 cars in June, as we revealed a few weeks ago. And they seem to be doing great with like an average of 1,000 delivery a day that they've been averaging. My sources within Tesla's sales and delivery departments yesterday said that for the first time, the average was over 1,000 vehicles a day. Excuse me. So in that sense, it's good. They were planning 7,300 deliveries over the next 70 days. So it's just over 1,000. So it's first time it's going over 1,000 average, but not that much over, which is why they started for the first time showing a little bit of skepticism about actually achieving that 33,000 goals because, I mean, they can still have a few over those next 7 days, but after those next 7 days, there's still just 3 days left until the end of the quarter. So that means they need to pack a lot of deliveries in those 3 days. And that's something they always do at the end of the quarter. It's always easier to sell at the end of the quarter because, especially in the U.S., through the federal tax rate against going down. And which leads us to one of our other articles we wanted to talk about this week, which is the change from the black color going is not standard anymore. It's going to cost $1,000 more, and the new standard is going to be white. So that's also, I think, an incentive at the end of the quarter because starting on July 1st, all black vehicles are going to be $1,000 more expensive, increasing the value of black vehicles right now. If you look at Tesla's new inventory vehicles, a lot of them are black, which is going to incentivize people to buy the cars by the end of the quarter within the next week. I don't think that's the biggest incentive, but it's still $1,000 worth. So,
yeah, I mean, I would say on the flip side, though, some people are probably like, oh, man, I'd like to have the white one, but I'm going to lose, $1,875 as of July 1st. So, it's kind of a rough situation. If you could somehow get a white one on June 30th.
The thing is that we don't know what the white one looks like yet, too.
It's going to be white.
Well, it's going to be white.
how bad could it be?
Yeah. Of course. How bad could it be? It's going to look nice for sure, but not that many people just buy a car without knowing actually what it looks like with a specific color. There's already a white Model 3, but and Model S and X, and because we've been talking about Model 3, but that actually applies to Model S and X too. Because for the last few months or years, maybe black was also the standard color for it, but the white option was only the pearl white with the coating, the extra coating on it.
But a few years ago,
there was a white option.
There was a just blank white, and it's fine. Actually, my Model X is white.
Is the regular white? Yeah, it's probably going to be the same thing. Probably going to be the exact same thing as a Model X, which looks nice.
You have a white Model 3, right?
No, mine is a problem here because mine is the Obsidian Black, which cost me $1,500 more.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Then
and you were like, "What's the difference?"
Yeah, and I've never seen the difference aside from like, if the sun is beaming on it, then yeah, I can see the little different design accent and the color. But for the most part, it looks just like the regular black, which is now $1,000 more. But Tesla already got rid of for the Model 3 at least. Maybe it's still for the Model S, I'm not sure. But for the Model 3, they got rid of it in black anyway. So now you just, if you want something black, it's going to cost you $1,000 more. And it's going to be just black. I think the Model 3 looks great on black too. But actually, I really like the pearl white and the silver were my favorites. So now I'm excited that the white is coming back. And if you look at the statistics in the U.S., black and white are very close for the favorite colors for cars. Yeah. Black actually has the lead though. So not a big change or actually on any kind of impact. So that's why I think that the reason they did it is really because of the end of the quarter and just trying to add a little more incentive to it. And you combine that in the US with the federal tax credit being slashed again, it's starting to get exciting. But coming back to delivery numbers, it's still going to be a ton of deliveries to pack at the very end of the quarter. It's going to be very hard for Tesla employees. So good luck to you guys.
So what's your number? Like 88,000?
I still think that 90 is possible. I still think it's possible that they might pull it off. Because, again, we're only talking about North America right now. That's the goal in North America. And the focus at the end of the quarter is always North America because it's quicker to deliver cars there because they come out right of the factory in California and there. But there's also the rest of the global market there. We've seen deliveries starting this week for the Model 3 in the UK. That's going to be a nice boost. Probably a few hundred cars there alone.
Whatever Tesla can get over there is gone.
Yeah, because it's already sold. Well, it's gone, but that's right. That's the other thing. You need to get people to take delivery. People oversee that as a kind of bottleneck, but you need to plan for the delivery. And some people, they need to get rid of the other car, they are working or whatever. So sometimes it's difficult. So that's why Tesla is always finding new ways to deliver cars. Oh, we'll deliver right at your work. No problem. Or things like that. So, well, yeah, but I came to my work with my own car. So there's always some kind of difficulties like that. But Tesla is trying, at the end of the quarter, they're trying really hard to work around those because they want those cars to be delivered so they can recognize the revenue for the cars because it's money that they already spent making it. So they want the revenue for it. And otherwise, on the balance sheet, it just looks bad. Since they paid thousands of dollars to make those cars and they haven't got the check yet, even though they will eventually, but otherwise they have to list those cars at transit in inventory. And of course, the market is always looking, especially Wall Street is always looking at Tesla's inventory, see if it's growing or not. That's all they see. If there's that's one of the data they use to claim that there's a diamond problem with Tesla. But of course, I think it's a lack of vision. It's a lack of trying to understand a disruptive player in the market because the rest of the industry move a lot of product through dealership model to the franchise dealership. So they sell to the dealership, which then sells to the consumer. So it's a whole different type of inventory that they're keeping versus Tesla only doing direct sales. So they are stuck with that inventory until it's in the hand of the customers. So it's all different model that we need to understand. And I think some of Wall Street is just not doing a good job at it, which is why you see a lot of pressure on Tesla. So, and same thing for the shorts. I think a lot of the shorts, they don't get it. And that's why they are bidding against Tesla. They just don't have the vision for it.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of brings up a question that I've always wondered. And I think I know the answer, but I'll pose it. Tesla sells fairly expensive cars. They don't have any marketing budget. They don't have to deal with
the ad marketing. They don't have advertising budget. They have a big marketing budget. Yeah,
their marketing budget is microscopic.
Fair.
So a very small marketing budget. They don't have dealers taking a cut. They don't have it seems like their overhead costs are way lower on a per car basis than anybody else. So how are they not able to, and they're selling their cars for, premium prices. How are they not able to turn a bigger profit on the Model 3, for instance? The last two quarters of last year, it seemed like they were doing a pretty good job of getting a good margin on the Model 3. Like what's happened there? And why do they need to sell 1,000 a day to be successful? And in my, my answer to that would be, you know, batteries are expensive. And, you know, the other, nobody else is kind of subsidizing the cost of batteries as much as Tesla is. So, you know, what's your feeling on that?
Well, I think if you're looking at the operational gross margin, because on the actual car itself, the gross margin is pretty good, which and that includes the cost of the making the vehicle, which would include the cost of the batteries. And I mean, at 20%, a lot of automakers would be jealous of that gross margin there. If you look on the operational side of things, that's where things get a little bit more difficult. And to your point that Tesla owning the entire thing and not having some of the expenses like marketing and advertising, or at least to a smaller degree than the other automakers, we're known as big spender in the advertising space. I think it's just trying to calibrate everything, like the referral program is a good example. So the referral program was in the operational side of cost, like, and as a client acquiring tool, it was extremely expensive per sale just a few months ago. Now they've tuned that down, and it's at a more reasonable level, extremely low level probably. But they're thinking again about tweaking it. Like Elon said, he was considering adding a full self-driving package as an incentive. So that would crank it up a little bit because, well, he did say like at 10 sales, 10 referrals, which you split the cost of whatever it is, $6,000 now into for 10 sales. Come again?
Are you talking about full self-driving?
Yeah.
Yeah.
6,000. So 6,000 between 10 referrals. So it's still a pretty high cost of acquisition of new customers. So things like that are tweaking. Things like Model 3 at first had a much higher rate of service within the first few months where they needed to do a lot of service. That also affects greatly the operational gross margin on getting the cars to customers. If the customer needs to bring it back for service a few times within the first few months, that has been going way down. So that's good for Tesla, but I think there's much way to improve. So I think Tesla is just still trying to figure. They know that they want a completely different model as the other automakers, and they have a pretty good idea what it is. But at the execution level, I think there's still a lot more room for optimization, and that's what they're doing now. But I think that none of those are unsolvable problems. None of those are then like that hard of problems. They can really put the times into it and the talent. But I think that right now they're putting all their efforts onto actually like ramping up production, maintaining production hours, because those are more or clearer problems that are like maker fail type of problems versus the more like it's not good for our financials, but it's not going to ruin us if it doesn't happen. So I think that there's a balance now. But as the company grows, especially with Model Y, I think because, of course, Tesla takes a vehicle program like the Model S. They do a lot of mistakes, but they still end up delivering a great product. They learn from those mistakes and they deliver a better product with the Model X, for example, but still a ton of mistakes. Then they use all those mistakes, the learning from all those mistakes, they deliver a Model 3, which was an even greater product by, I think, everyone almost unanimously agree. And then, but they still made a ton of mistakes, especially on the production lifetime thing, because it was a more mass market, a higher volume vehicle to make. So they made a bunch of mistakes on that front, which bring me to Model Y, which I think is going to be a much smoother program because they won't be doing the same mistake that they did with the Model 3 in terms of production. And they clearly didn't do the same mistakes in terms of designing the vehicle that they did from Model S and X, because Model X, at first we thought it was going to be a simple, like just a SUV version of the Model S, but of course they went. What was Elon's analogy on it? Like the Fabergé egg, I think, of vehicles and all that. They put way too much features in it that were more complicated than they thought they were going to be. So without all those mistakes, with all those mistakes happening and learning from them, I think the Model Y is going to be the first high volume mass market vehicle program from Tesla that's going to be very representative of them going forward with the next programs. If they really learn from their mistake, which I think they did for the most part. But at the same time, you see all the some executive departures and things like that. So is that knowledge really staying at Tesla, or is it moving away? There's a question to be asked there. But I think for the most part, it's staying there, which is good. Sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah. So on the Model Y, it doesn't appear that they're doing too many interesting things in terms of, you know, the product, but it also like, mm-hmm. you know, I think they understand that the Model Y form factor is just like the most, in demand form factor out there right now. So they mm-hmm. just want to kind of get that to market as soon as possible. But
Model 3 with the hatch, like, it's a Model 3 with the hatch.
Yeah, a little taller. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And maybe, you know, Tesla, maybe that was the vehicle that should have been the Model 3. But
agreeably, yeah.
Also, yeah. I mean, also, like, it, you know, from my standpoint or our standpoint, there's not as many interesting new things. You know, like, there's no gull wing door or falcon wing doors. There's no, you know, crazy speed or some new feature that we know. I mean, that we know of yet. So it, from that perspective, it's not quite as exciting as the Model 3 or the Model X or the Model S.
Yeah, for sure. But I think the hatch is just so big on its own that maybe the extra seats too. But I cannot imagine like the very level of usefulness of those extra seats. But yeah, I think the hatch on itself alone. The only thing that worries me in terms of the program, the Model Y program, is how they're bringing it to production. Like, if they had another factory for it where they could just do everything from the ground up, that would have been great, I think. Maybe there's going to be some compromises with doing it. Now it looks quite certain that they're doing it in Fremont for the vehicle assembly and body. And they're doing, of course, the powertrain and Gigafactory, which I'm fine with that. It makes sense, of course, in making the powertrain and Gigafactory one. But the Fremont thing, adding another mass market vehicle program in there, it's going to get tight. Very tight.
It's already way tight. Like, mm-hmm. even parking there is a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, theoretically, maybe the BART will come down there. I know they've been trying to get a BART station for a while.
They have one. They have one like, right behind the factory, don't they?
Do they?
Yeah, have one. The only problem is, like, getting from the BART station to the factory is apparently complicated because, like, there's no clear path. But I think the running shuttles from there, or they want to make a bike path or something like that. Because it's right behind the factory, but the factory is so huge that from getting from the entrance to the factory, from the station to the entrance factory, is still like a mile or two.
Maybe they should make a back entrance or something.
Yeah, but it's all like a warehouse type of deal in the back. It's not it's not where the manufacturing floor is or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, even before the Model 3 was launched, I feel like the parking lot at the Fremont factory
was always an issue.
Impossible to park in.
Yeah.
I mean, even going to like the Model 3, previews before they were even building it, the parking was like absurd.
Yeah. So you remember back in 2016, we were reporting on an Instagram account that was a security guard in Fremont that was an Instagram account dedicated to the bad parking job of Tesla employees there because they were just so much cars there that they were parking on top of each other's. Yeah. Maybe some kind of, Japanese parking towers that are just like same parking spot, you can park like six cars on top of each other.
They have those in New York.
Yeah, they have some of those now, right?
Yeah, so that'd be interesting if that was the case. Theoretically, you could have those cars, you know, theoretically, as more employees start getting Model 3s, you could have them like summon somewhere else.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good project for them.
But I mean, you know, there's another parking lot on the south side of the factory that's like super far from the factory too, where they have to run a shuttle from that parking lot too. To the main entrance of the factory, so really a nightmare. So I think another 7,000. I don't know what they're going to be aiming for at the Fremont factory for Model Y, but it's probably going to be the same thing as Model 3, like 7,000 cars a week
at least. I think they anticipate Model 3. I mean, they said Model 3 or sorry, Model Y will equal the production of Model S, X, and Model 3 combined.
But then there's also Shanghai Gigafactory 3. Right. Model Y is also going to be manufactured there. So we'll see what's going to be the split between the two. But yeah, you're probably right. If overall they think they're going to do, Model Y is going to be a bigger car.
So it makes sense. So you mentioned referral program. We haven't talked about this. How many referrals do you have this period?
This round? This round I'm over 130, I think.
Oh wow. I'm at 43.
But does it really matter? That's the thing.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't matter. I mean, technically one of my car is not on the supercharger unlimited. But they never give me any credits. They don't give me credit for it because
I have credits.
You have credits?
Yeah.
But one of your car is unlimited, right? Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, my Model X is unlimited.
Yeah, because I'm gonna say. But did you had your Model 3 before your Model X? I think so, right?
No, I had the Model X first because I traded in the Model S for the Model X.
And you did that before you bought a Model 3 last year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I might have bought it before, but I got it.
Reservation. Of course, reservation before, but not. Model S predates my Model 3, and my Model S is, of course, unlimited.
So, look, if you go to like free supercharger miles left, I have 120,000 miles.
Those, they expire pretty quick or something, right? No?
I don't know.
That's the other thing, too. I think but where do you see that?
So, if you go in the loot box.
Yeah.
And just go to the... I mean, it might be different in Canada, but it's like the home page of the loot box.
Yeah. It's
and it tells you.
No. No, I just have the leaderboard on it, which doesn't work, of course. No, I don't have any. It tells me that I can get free supercharger, but I don't have any. It's not showing. But maybe I have 83 delivered and 42 ordered. So, 125.
I have 11 ordered and 30 delivered. So, that's 41.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that, so that's one part of it, the superchargers. I don't matter that much because, anyway, I'm in LA right now and I don't drive my cars, but the guy that has my Model 3, he doesn't supercharge much. He uses it to go to work and doesn't need a supercharger. My parents have my Model S and they do use a supercharger board, but again, it's unlimited, so doesn't matter. But on the other, you can get the Model Y or the Roadster drawing each month and each quarter. Of course, we cannot win the Roadster again because we each have already won it through the last round of the referral program. But I don't get the Model Y. Like, they should have two or three of them already. They should have had drawings for two or three of them, but they didn't announce anything. So
maybe they had the drawing and they only told the one person who got it.
Maybe, but I feel like they should use that. They should like promote that, they do it so that everybody else know that it was actually done. And also it motivate people, I think, to, oh, okay, it's really happening. So I could win one too. I mean, I think I have more entries into that than anybody else at this point, especially if they give me two and then 10. Because during the month that it was five times, I got probably 100 referrals during that month. So it's literally 1,000 chances to win. And I clearly didn't, or Tesla didn't inform me anything. But I'd love the Model Y. It would currently be my new daily driver.
Right.
Because I'm not going to daily drive the Roadster.
Right.
I'm not daily driving.
Yeah, I don't even know what I would do. $1,000
like, car.
You know, so my expectations are that I'll never see a Roadster because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be let down at any point. But if I did get one and I did decide to keep it and pay the insurance and the taxes on all that, which is quite a bit, I would probably almost never drive it. Because like what parking lot would you want to be in where somebody could, like, you know, open their car door and like,
You cannot think like that.
I'm already like that.
You'll never sleep.
In my model.
But
I already don't want people to mess with it.
Yeah, I don't either, but you can't switch like that. My Model S signature, which I, in the back of my mind, I still hope that maybe it's going to be a collection car. I'm not saying it will be, but like I have some kind of like just a small hope that maybe it would be at some point. That's why I'm keeping it. It got a hit and run the other day. Like, it's a bummer, but what you going to do? Like, the insurance pay for it and everything. At least my insurance are pretty good, and they pay for it. There's no deductible if it's a hit and run. But you cannot sweat it that much. Like, it's shit like that happens.
Okay.
All right. How about we move on a little bit? And if you've been experiencing a range drop recently in your Tesla vehicle, we might have the explanation why here. So over the last week, we had last 2 weeks, we've been getting reports from Tesla owners, especially owners of a older Tesla vehicle with the 85 kilowatt-hour battery pack, that they've seen some significant drop in max range, especially after the update 2019.16.1 and .2. One example was sent to us by Model S 2014 Model S 85 owner David Rasmussen. He got one of the most drastic one that we got. Most of them were like between 12 miles of drop in just a few weeks. Rasmussen got a 30 mile drop in just about five. Well, he says 5 weeks, but so most people don't charge up to 100% every time. So you don't know exactly. He's been tracking his max range for a while now, and he got them after all the different updates and mileage. And the last time he had a 100% charge, it was 247 miles, and it was 130,000 miles on the odometers. And when he did it again, 131,000 miles, it was down to 217. So that's a massive 30 mile drop in range, an 11% drop in overall range so fast. And of course, that's weird because if you actually look at more data on Tesla's battery degradation, it's been very good. Like, you see less than 10% degradation over 160 miles of range. So that didn't make no sense at all. And a few other owners were in the same situation. They went to Tesla, at least Tesla service centers, and they were all said the same. They all said, oh, it's normal battery degradation. Nothing we can do about it. But it all happened after the same software update, so a lot of them thought that maybe it was related to that. So we reached out to Tesla and said, well, what's up with that? And Tesla said that indeed that software update was related to the battery management system, and it aimed to protect the battery and improve battery longevity. And they said it wasn't intentional that it led to an important range loss for some owners, and they said that it's only a small percentage of owners that had the new update that were affected by it. And again, it looks like it's mostly Model S and X owners with 85 kilowatt battery pack. But I have an older Model S with 85 kilowatt battery pack, and I did get that update, and it didn't affect my max range at all. It actually went up. I used to get 403 kilometers max range. After I got the reports from everybody and I got the update too, I did a max range and I got 407 kilometers of range at max range.
So, I mean, maybe it was only a certain allotment.
Yeah. Again, I asked Tesla what kind of variables end up creating that limitation on the max range. And it looks like a pretty specific limitation where the battery cells inside those 85 kilowatt back get charged up to only 3.5 volts instead of the usual 4.2. So they just limit the top charge of it. Very strange. Tesla did say that they're going to work on minimizing that range loss on those people that were affected by the range loss. So sounds like they're working on another software update to tweak that battery protection and longevity update so that it doesn't result in a big range difference for those people. We'll see. We'll keep an eye on it because, of course, sometimes Tesla says things like that and nothing happens. So But if you are one of the owners affected, let us know, because I'd like some more data points on this, though it looks like quite obvious at this point. All right, speaking of other data point, but this one is only a single one that we posted earlier today, because Tesla hasn't gotten back to me on this yet. They did say that they will. Just going to check real quick if we get a podcast exclusive on that. But the article is already up. No, we don't. It's already up on the website. It's about the supercharging speed after the last update, the 2019.20.2 update, increased by 20% on existing supercharger stations. So that's the V2 supercharger station that had been unlocked with more power recently, went up to 150 kilowatts, from 120. If you get a Model 3 on that, if you get a Model 3, I think especially the long range Model 3, a Reddit user called Wogs tested it out versus from a 5% to 80% charge versus the previous version of the update, and he got a 20% faster charge rate, where it gets to a higher, over 120 kilowatt charge rate faster, and then it maintains it also for a little bit longer at that 145 kilowatt charge rate, around after 40 41 kilowatt 40 41% state of charge, it would drop. Instead, now it's closer to 45, and then it tempers a little bit slower than it does with the a previous version, and maintain it after that too. For at 60% state of charge, it would drop drastically before. Now you can get at still over 100 kilowatt at over 60 for a little while, so you can get to that 80% charge 20% faster.
Right, and he went from 5% to 80%, which I imagine is probably going to be a pretty common charge state. You know, you want to kind of roll into a supercharger as low as possible, and you want to kind of leave at 80%.
Yeah,
and he got there in 30 minutes, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a pretty good, like, you know, compared to before, which was like I think 37 minutes, and then before that it was almost 40 minutes. So that's a pretty good rate.
And it's great.
There's going to be faster chargers when those things, you know, it kind of hits. You can see on the graph where it kind of hits the high end where it just, you know, at 140, whatever, 145, it kind of flatlines. So on the, obviously the faster chargers, those will go up and then come back down, and it'll be even shorter of a time. But, you know, even on the regular superchargers, 30 minutes to go from 5% to 80%, which is a typical use case, that's pretty solid. I mean, that's pretty much as good as you could almost hope for, really.
Yeah, you go to the bathroom, you get a sandwich or something, and then it's almost charged already.
Yeah, I mean, you're almost like stressed out that you have to run back in time. And
yeah, that's the other problem, that because then you start thinking about idle fees and things like that, where you need to get the car as soon as possible, as soon as it ends charging. So yeah, you need to think about that. And but yeah, that's one data point on the new 2019.20.2 software update with Model 3 long range, with using, of course, the new en-route battery warm-up feature, which is simply consists of entering the supercharger station in your navigation system so that it knows that you're going to supercharge, so that it prepares the battery pack for it. That makes probably most of the difference here. Tesla has been tweaking the
Yeah, you can see on that graph, like, it starts way higher from 60 to 121. It's also interesting, like, this is like 75% range. So in a miles, like pure miles, you're getting like 230 something miles in 30 minutes. That's pretty good. That's like 3 hours of driving.
Yeah, exactly. Because after 3 hours,
three hours of driving in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah, that's why it makes Model 3 not just Model 3, but Tesla's vehicle the best for long distance travel on zero emission, of course, debatable, basically, depending on where you get your electricity, but you know what I mean. We reached out to Tesla because the software update actually didn't mention any type of update to the charging cycle optimization or anything like that. So we reached out to them about what exactly happened with that update, and we're gonna get back to you if we get an answer on that, but nothing yet. All right. CPO's Model 3 inventory. Used Model 3s that started last week. We reported on it that the first used Model 3 on Tesla's website, which are actually CPOs where they certified Tesla did the whole expansion thing. They give the new warranty on it. Well, the new used warranty on it, I should say. There were a few of them available last week, but just a few in the Bay Area. Now Tesla dropped a bunch more of them in a few other markets, including Los Angeles, San Diego, and Las Vegas. And a bunch more units are available. And the prices are pretty high. I mean...
Well, these are appreciating assets, right?
Yeah, well, obviously not, because they're still lower than their original prices, but very not that much lower. I mean, a few thousand, maybe like five or six going to be the best pricing. I had the discount over the new version of it. But at the same time, the new version of most of those, because most of those are long-range rear-wheel drive Model 3, is not available anymore, or it is as of the menu item. So it's not as popular as it used to be. But you still can get them, really. But you can get them with Autopilot or... there's so much thing that Tesla can do now with in terms of software features that they can also change the value of the car if they want. But yeah, it does sound that eventually, like, because most of Teslas, those are probably people that are upgrading their car, right? So you see a lot of rear-wheel drive. So when Tesla came out with the performance version, maybe people started upgrading and things like that. Because most of Tesla's used inventory from all S and X come from leased vehicle that are coming off their lease. That's not the case yet for Model 3 because Tesla just started a lease lease program a few months ago. And they even said that they're not going to let people buy their car at the end of the lease. So you would think, oh, maybe it's going to be a much more inventory of used Model 3s. Not even Tesla wants to use them for the Tesla network. Yep. Yeah. And it goes back to appreciating asset. If they actually appreciated during the lease of those vehicles, they actually gain in value. You don't want them to purchase it back. Or if they do, they're going to purchase it back more than they would have purchased this in the first place and when they decided to lease it, which makes no sense whatsoever. But it all based on the confidence that it's going to be actual and appreciating asset. And I think no one is more confident in that than Tesla, because I think the average customer is very skeptical about that claim. And as they should be, because it would be the first time ever that a non-collection vehicle would appreciate in value. I mean, and no vehicle would be a collectible at the rate Tesla is producing Model 3s. So it would.
The used inventory. I also think it's kind of interesting that, I mean, all the Model 3s in the inventory, as far as I can tell, are just the standard rear-wheel drive.
There's some all-wheel drive. I saw a few all-wheel drive. Just a few.
So, but I mean, it's basically they're selling the hardware. They're not really... The software is something that you can configure. Like, you know, if you see a 2017 Model 3 at 41,000 and it's, you know, the base configuration, you can say, well, I also want the heated seats, and I also want the, I mean, not the heated seats is kind of a thing, but you know, the autopilot and that kind of stuff. You can put that on any car, and it's not part of the price. It's just a weird thing that something that's such a big part of the car isn't tied to the hardware of the car. It can be updated or downgraded or whatever. You know, if you have autopilot on a car and you give it back to Tesla, they can sell it without autopilot, and then, or they can sell it with autopilot.
I think for the most part now they're selling it with autopilot. It's just the FSD that's not included,
right?
And so they probably, if someone purchased the FSD, they probably remove it and resell it the second time. That's strange, but because there have to be a few of them that actually bought FSD, right? Maybe not.
Right.
All right. Well, while we're on the value of Tesla's vehicles, there was a pretty extensive study that came out this week from IC Cars, where they went into the deep dive of value retention of a bunch of vehicles, gasoline cars, electric cars, and Tesla vehicles included. And they determined that the average of all vehicles in terms of depreciation over 3 years is 38.2%. average for electric vehicles after 2 years is 56.6%. And the exception to that rule was a Tesla Model S. After 3 years, only 17.1% depreciation. So a third of the rate of the average electric cars and half the rate of the average car, period. Now, and actually the study did mention that, but I think mentioning is might be not enough. They should probably include it in the actual calculation, but we're talking about the federal tax credit here. When you're talking about the value retention of an electric vehicle, you have to mention the incentive for it, which is, of course, the federal tax credit at $7,500. And a good point that Seth made, actually, when I wrote that article, is that, like, at least, what, half of the vehicles in the U.S. that are electric right now, they got $10,000 of incentive, you'd say? At least half?
Oh, at least half. I mean, California is 50%, then New York and Colorado and a couple other places offered $2,500 on top of the federal tax credit. Yeah. So, like, the second that you buy this car, you know, there's that, you know, you drive it off the lot, you lose a certain value. Well, it's even more so on electric cars because you lose what the drive it off the lot amount, but you also lose $10,000 on more than 50% of the cars, which is crazy. Like that, like, you know, a $30,000 Nissan Leaf, you drive it off the lot, it's worth $20,000. And then whatever, you know, new fee there is. So, like, electric cars are going to get a raw deal in this survey, and they are. It's actually kind of surprising to me that Tesla was able to retain 17%.
Because the Tesla also includes the federal tax credit, especially if those ones, because those ones are over a three-year period. So 3 years ago, all Tesla vehicles get at least the $7,500. And then, like you said, in the other states.
But I mean, that's...
There are more expensive
Teslas
cars.
Are more expensive.
Yeah, right. They are more expensive. But still, even more expensive vehicles also depreciate at a higher rate normally than they do. Like you take a 5 Series out of the dealership and already drops in value by like 30% or something. But Tesla's not as much. And with when you account for the federal tax credit, the best example of federal tax credit is that if you take a Tesla vehicle, you buy it full price, and it comes with like $10,000 in the trunk, basically. And then you take that $10,000 out of the trunk, and then you try to resell it. Of course, it's going to lose in value more faster because someone was going to, all right, instead of buying that car, I'm just going to buy the new one that also comes with $10,000 in the trunk. So that's what affects the pricing, basically. So very, very surprising here on that front for a Tesla vehicle. But of course, the study framed it, electric vehicles lose a lot more value than the average car. And of course, when you look at it, you look at the most the faster depreciating ones, and the Fiat 500e is there. But of course, Fiat 500e is the cheapest of them all. Also, not the best. And I also think that most people lease it. Like in California, they often have like very good lease that's super cheap on them. So people just lease that car for a few years, and then it gets back, and there's a huge used inventory that builds up because you can get those for less than $10,000, I think.
If I lived in LA, a Fiat 500e would be a very tempting car to get because you could park it pretty much anywhere. Like it's. Mm. It doesn't have much range, but like as long as you stay in LA, you're probably fine. I don't know. It's not like it's kind of a cute looking car. I would like, and they're selling for like $5,000. So
yeah, and I'm always blown away when people drive the non-electric version of those.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm like, dude, they're so cheap. Used, especially just buy a used one if you actually want a Fiat 500. They look exactly the same. They are electric. You won't pay gas with, and they're so cheap that you probably get the value of it just from the gas savings alone. Well, although that it's not very, it's not like the gas version is a gas Gosling car, but anyway, you get the point. So interesting to look at, but if you want cheap, the Leaf was also on top of the list. The BMW i3, which is more surprising, but BMW i3 maybe something that affects it a lot was the fact that they upgraded almost every year or two. Like you get a better battery every year for the same price, or almost the same price. So the older version, the might be depreciating a little bit faster. Sort of a similar situation for the Leaf. Then the e-Golf is also on the list, and the Fusion Energy is also there. Ford Fusion Energy. All right, the paint. We already talked about the paint. The new paint is going to be standard paint is going to be white for Tesla. The launch of Tesla Arcade. All right. So last week we saw Elon at E3 sort of teasing it, but it was launched this week officially, starting with the, what's it called? The racing game, the Beach Buggy Racing, Beach Buggy Racing 2 from Vector Unit. That's the first game available in the new Tesla arcade. So instead of being the drop down Easter egg menu on your Tesla, you have a new, in the app launcher, you have a new Tesla arcade that's where your games are going to be. So the games are not part of the Easter eggs anymore. They are an actual feature of the car starting. Well, the old ones are still there, but the new one that the part that sort of launching Tesla arcade, if you will, is the Beach Buggy Racing 2. And, you can control it, the game from the touchscreen, or you can actually use the steering wheel as a controller. And Tesla produced some kind of like a fun commercial type video for it. And I was kind of shocked at first, because at the end of the video, you see it and the guy moved the steering wheel and you see the wheels just move at a pretty rough angle, really, which I thought would be like, it's kind of unnecessary wear on the wheels. And we reached out to Tesla about that, and they did admit that they exaggerated the movement of the wheels in the video, because it's actually tuned. The steering wheel is tuned. So the wheels are still going to move a little bit, but the steering is tuned when the video game is on, so that the movement is not that big, so that you don't actually move the wheel that much. Not at least not in the video, which is quite kind of an extreme movement, which makes sense, of course. But if you don't want to move the wheel at all, you can also, I don't think it's yet compatible, but it's going to be soon, Xbox controller compatibility in the car. So you're going to be able to, you can buy an Xbox controller, plug it into the USB port of your Tesla, and you're going to be able to control the game from there.
So I think Tesla needs to start thinking about more USB ports and higher chargers
definitely.
At this point.
Yep. They should also think about incorporating hard drive directly in the car, making an option like you order
a
computer,
hard drive, but like a big USB stick version. You know, like 256 gigabytes would be fine, and you can buy those on Amazon for $20. So it can't be that expensive.
No, but what I'm saying is that it's connected internally with it, so you still have access to the USB port on your car, and that hard drive capacity, that the USB drive capacity is not use a port on your car, so that you can still use a charger, the phone charger, or anything like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that it should be like they should just give you a USB thing. I'm just saying that the price of storage, you know, 256 gigabytes is like $20. So it's not, I mean, of course they have to design it and test it. And
yeah, exactly. That's what I'm like, telling, yeah.
Like car level quality stuff. You know, like I remember the display that they got originally wasn't car ready, so it turned yellow. So like they would have to get like some good storage. So maybe that costs like $40 and, you know, whatever. But it would be such a nice option not to have to stick a USB card in your thing for Sentry Mode.
For Sentry Mode, for dash cam. And I think it would be incorporated with some kind of onboard or Wi-Fi connected way to upload the content and get it out. We've seen some people already doing that with like the web browser. So you can connect your USB drive to the internet, and through your web browser, you can see the files. So I think that should be standard from Tesla to do that. And then when you order your Tesla, it could be like $100 or $200 feature where you get higher memory capacity connected, that already configured your dash cam, your Sentry Mode. And then maybe it can be big enough, so that Tesla was saying that for the Tesla arcade game, that they need more space and things like that. So it could be also related to Tesla arcade space for memory for the game. So I think it's going to be more like ordering a computer experience at some point, ordering a Tesla car. And that's going to be a great example of it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is right here. This is a 2 gigabyte SSD.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's this big, and it's reinforced. It's like you can throw it around or whatever. And, you know, it's probably like, I don't know, this one's probably $100.
Yeah.
But like, in the grand scheme of things, having 2 gigabytes of storage for videos from the Sentry, and
it can go up fast.
So yeah,
Sentry Mode fast with three different angles and everything, and it goes fast.
Yeah.
So I think that should become a feature soon. All right, moving on from Tesla. We're going to talk a little bit about VW Volkswagen and the new announcement this week about the Heidi battery warranty and the confirm also some features. And not just about the ID3 here. That's what something that was misunderstood in the comment section, because I did say that the charge rate was sort of disappointing and everywhere like, hey, what are you talking about? 125 kilowatts is a great charge rate for a compact car. Sure, it is for the ID3 for a compact car, but they are talking about the charge rate of the ID family, really. Not just so that would include the ID Cross and things like that, which I think they need to be more competitive because... Well, even the ID3, I would argue that's already need to be more competitive because they're trying to compete with the Model 3 here with the lower less expensive version of the Model 3. And Model 3 can do 250 kilowatts. So that's half the rate of the Model 3.
Yeah, I mean, but so the other competitors, though, like in the space, which I wouldn't, you know, this is a hatchback. It kind of competes with the Nissan Leaf, competes with, what's that thing that just we covered is like 52... The Renault, I think.
Yeah, well, the next post is about the Renault launching the new version of the Zoe, which, fair enough, is only 50 kilowatts, so it's even worse. Right. But I mean, that's the other thing, too. And let's englobe everything together now. There are the existing vehicle program, long-time existing vehicle, electric vehicle program, like the Leaf, like the Hi3, like the Zoe Renault. Those vehicles right now are like the last generation of electric vehicles, and there's a new generation coming up. Starting with the Model 3, I think. And now the ID3 is coming, the e-tron, bunch of other vehicles hitting the market. Those are the new generation of EVs. They all have higher charge rates. But that's my point here. They all have higher charge rate, and all higher charge rate, the ID family looks like it's going to have the lower charge rate. So in the case of the ID3, it's going to be 125, which again, like you said, not that bad if you compare it to the Leaf and everything, but you compare it to the last generation of EVs that are just seeing incremental improvement in their capacity. I would have liked a bigger step for the new generation of cars, like we've seen with the e-tron coming at 150, actually 155, and they are pretty good at maintaining that charge rate, which is great on its own too, than the Model 3. Much higher charge rate, though they maintain it not as long, but over the entire charging cycle, it's actually better. So those things are more exciting. That's what I'm saying. In terms of the battery warranty, they are saying a 70% guaranteed capacity for 8 years and 160,000 kilometers, which is 100,000 miles. That's in line with the industry. I mean, the Model 3 has also a 70% guaranteed capacity for 8 years or 100,000 miles. But that's for the standard range version. The longer range version actually has 120 miles. So that's the only difference here. A little better warranty for the Model 3 long range, but not for the standard range battery pack.
Yeah, I mean, compared to the what we're about to talk about next, the new Zoe, like, it's fantastic, like 120. And it depends, again, if the charging curve is like the Audi, where it stays at 125 for a huge portion of the charge rate, 125 is not so bad. But I agree with you, like, obviously more is better. This is kind of a new architecture coming out. They could have theoretically had at least 150, but you know,
and that's for a car that's coming out later this year, probably mostly in 2020. So that's my point too, like there's gonna be other improvement by then by other automakers. And my biggest concern is not for the ID3, it's for the way that they phrase it. It's for like the same thing for the battery warranty and the charging capacity, the two things that they confirmed this week. And they phrase it for the ID batteries. That's what Volkswagen will offer, the ID batteries in different sizes, but with the charging rate 125. So, it's okay for the ID3. It's not okay for the ID Cross, though. The ID Cross is going to be a direct competitor with the Model Y, I think. Model Y is going to be able to 250 kilowatt charging. So, those cars are going to come out at the same time, probably in late 2020. Those things are less competitive. That's what I'm saying.
Right. So I agree with that.
No. But then you're right. You go to the Renault launched the 2020 version this week, and there's some design update. There's a bigger screen inside, little tweaks to the design. But the bigger, the big difference is the new battery pack, 52 kilowatt hour battery pack, which is pretty good. They are saying a 242 miles, almost 400 kilometers of range WLTP. Again, also pretty good. So you're going to get easy over 200 miles of real world driving on this thing. Well, easy, at least. A new 100 kilowatt motor. So upgrade very similar to the Nissan Leaf. Of course, the Renault program follows the Nissan Leaf pretty closely. But then 50 kilowatt charging. So still pretty bad. But
that, and they actually mentioned in one of the videos that it was going to take like an hour to get to 80%, which is like, come on, guys. Like, it's just frustrating. Like, what you have to, you know, like if you're taking a trip, you have to wait an hour.
Yeah, an hour for 50%. That's maintaining 50 kilowatts all the way through, too, because it's a 52 kilowatt hour battery pack. But, yeah, I think it's just not a long distance driving car. It's just not. It's a city urban car, and that's it. I mean, you can still take it on a longer trip because it has a 200 miles of range. So you can get like a 400 miles trip out of it in a day where you do your 200 miles. You stop for an hour or so, and then you set out for another part of the day driving. It's doable. It's just not ideal at all.
Right. And I would also say that even city driving, like if you don't have a garage or a charger where you're parked overnight, like that speed's kind of important. I guess some people would be driving to an office or wherever that might have chargers or whatever, but like, you know, you don't pull into a charger like you pull into a gas station. I mean, in this case, particularly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you would pull in and you would have to do something for an hour and a half or 2 hours to get a full charge. And that doesn't seem great. Like,
yeah.
It's a weird.
They do mention like a pretty fast level two charging with a 22 kilowatt onboard charger. So if,
that's true. If you have that weird three phase.
Yeah. So if you have like good work, maybe charging stations, that could be an option. So it might be a good car to consider depending on your specific needs and situation. Like if your employer for some reason has great charging where you park your car at work, then maybe that's a great option for you guys because you can just always charge there and get a full charge every day from that. And sometimes it's free too. So. For places where the electricity rate is high, I've seen several employer offer that as a perk where free charging for electric cars. I mean, when you replace your gas, when you calculate your gas saving, not just from the cost based on your savings from the cost of electricity, but from no cost at all, it's a pretty good deal. you have to do the math based on your the variables in your region on the electricity cost and the gasoline cost, but okay. It makes sense, especially for a less expensive vehicle like the Zoe, which is not that expensive. Of course, the Zoe also in certain markets, they still offer the whole, what you call it, battery pack lease or battery pack rental, where you actually own the car, right. Not the battery pack. I'm not a big fan of that. Like, either I'm leasing a car or I'm owning the car, but leasing half of it and owning half of it, it's kind of a weird deal. But if you're concerned about battery capacity degradation, then that's maybe an interesting option for you. And it's, of course, cheaper to a degree.
You know, I mentioned this at the time. It this whole thing, like this vehicle, kind of closely matches a Chevy Bolt or the Ampera E. I think it kind of shows how big GM dropped the ball by not bringing the Ampera E in like larger quantities to Europe, you know, as the Ampera or, you know, they sold Opel right as the Ampera was launching, but they could have brought it in, you know, in any of their other brands.
Mm-hmm.
They should have brought it to Europe. I mean, I feel like the Chevy Bolt is a European car and, you know, it has pretty fast charging, faster than this thing. I think it charges at 54 kilowatts. It's got a bigger battery than this thing and it's a little bit bigger, but like pretty much the same size. I kind of feel like Chevy or GM really dropped the ball.
Well, GM, they saw the regulations coming in Europe, and they said we want no part of that.
Right.
We're basically truck companies now, and Europe is only our only market, which is strong on our actual passenger cars. And you're telling us that we're gonna have to do a ton of EVs now to comply with those regulations? No, thank you. They sold their old business, and then they said our only car, we're gonna keep it here, where we can actually get some good carb credit from it, and that's it. So yeah, and they were saying that at the same time when they announced that we are all in on electric vehicles. So
yeah,
make what you want of that. But yeah, I think now they're doing the Corsa, or I think it's known as a Corsa electric, but I think that's Opel. But then right. What's
Opel got bought by?
Vauxhall. Vauxhall, is that the other one, the British one?
Yeah, Vauxhall.
I think they have their own version of it. I'm not sure it's called the Corsa too. I don't think so. But it's the same car, basically. And so I think that's going to be the one that's going to replace the Impera E, which, of course, Opel still relies on GM supply for that. And like you said, it's pretty limited. But, I mean, the European market, you guys are going to be lucky for the next few years. You're going to get, I think, a couple more options than we do here in North America. We're going to have to check those out soon. I think you're going to check them out soon, Seth, when are you going there?
Yeah, hopefully I'm going to be there mid to late August, and hopefully we'll see a Mercedes ECQ and maybe
EQC.
Maybe we'll get an EQC. That's right. And hopefully we'll have a look at this Renault and maybe some other ones too.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do with that. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Thanks a lot for listening, guys, this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. We're going to be here at the same. You can leave us a thumbs up or a subscribe on YouTube or subscribe to your local podcast app, your favorite podcast app. And we're going to be back same place, same time next week. Have a good one.